potatoes?
Potato.
Tomato.
Hops.
Oh.
Actually, they are linked here. We're going to talk about them all through a single fungicide label. So we're going to do pesticide label review today. How to read one of these things, because, you know, it's 75 pages long, and do you really need to look at it all? But before we get into that, do we have any housekeeping today?
We do have a wee bit of housekeeping. We have someone new. I'm just looking at my notes here. Karen has joined us. Karen has joined us looking into the back catalog. So thank you, Karen. Welcome.
Awesome.
At Rye Field Hops. I confess I do not know. Well, I do know that Karen is not in North America because I'm seeing some weird kind of currency conversion thing on Patreon. So
Karen is Australia.
Nice.
She's on the Australian Independent Hop Growers Forum on Facebook, I think.
Oh, beautiful. Yes, Rye Field Hops. There they are in Bemboka. Bemboka. Okay.
Although well, welcome. Murder that.
Yeah, yeah, I'm sure. It's B-E-M-B-O-K-A, Bemba. How else can you pronounce that? Bemboka? I don't know. Maybe the K is silent? Bemboka?
The K is silent.
Yeah. I got nothing. I got nothing.
You got nothing.
Karen, well, welcome aboard.
Welcome very much.
Happy to have you with us. All right, so that is it for housekeeping today. It's all I got.
That's it. That's all you got.
That's all I got. There's probably a new episode of Backyard Brew Farm dropping at the same time as this, but I don't know what day of the week it is anymore. What did we just have? We just had Memorial Day. It's, 4-day weeks are confusing, so I don't know what day of the week it is or what month. I think it's June now. But now that we're in June, Backyard Brew Farm, if you are not a patron with us, then you're not going to get to hear those anymore. They are only going to be on the Patreon feed. So we give you a little taste, really more of a little sniff since it's, you know, it's related to beer. But jump on, give it a try, see what you think. We've got a couple of fun episodes out there. I think by now Zest will have been released.
Oh, boy. Finally.
Yes. Zest! Love it. We're going to have, you know, recycle that over and over and have, you know, return to zest.
Yep. Zest the revenge.
Yep. The Phantom Zest.
Yep.
All right. Who wants to hear about chemical labels?
Nobody.
Yeah. Well, I made myself like a 3-egg omelet and a big cup of coffee and some fruit cup here. So I need you to talk for a while I munch. We're going to talk about chemical labels.
We are going to talk about chemical labels.
I'm just down to half a mug of lukewarm coffee. I'm looking at here.
Well, I mean, we keep talking about read the label, right? Every time we talk about agrochemicals, we always say read the label. Phytotoxicity, read the label. Tank mix compatibility, read the label. Application rates, read the label. But when you look at one of these labels, you're like, holy hell, how much of this stuff really applies to me? Because hops are like one, usually like byline somewhere buried deep in this. Find hops and how much do I need to spray? Well, there's a whole lot of other stuff that's buried in this document that can make or break your application. It can, have things in there about chemical compatibility, about optimal pH ranges. You know, you could be spending hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of dollars on a single chemical and spraying it and not seeing any efficacy because maybe your pH range or your spray solution was wrong. And all that is buried inside of this document. So I thought, let's just go through one as an example and see what each, what does this label actually tell you? Because I don't think, we make this assumption that people understand what they're reading on one of these labels, and that's not necessarily the case.
Right. And of course, you should have a pesticide applicator's license, state specific to use any of this stuff. But we are in a day and age when so many things that you buy or download are self-explanatory, or there's a little video that shows you how to use it, and then you're done. That I think the art of actually following directions has been lost over the years because people don't have patience for it anymore.
Yeah, they just want to know, tell me which way to point this thing. That's all I needed, because, how hard could it be? Well, when you're dealing with, physiology pretty hard. There's a lot of detail there. So you want to make sure these chemicals are optimized to work very well in very specific situations. And so this is more akin to, you know, I like to say you go to the big box store or whatever, the hardware store, the garden center, and you get a bottle of Ortho tree fruit spray. And it's just broad spectrum stuff, and you just kind of hose it on there and hope for the best, right? And you really don't have to think too much more about it than that. That's like a chainsaw compared to a scalpel that we're talking about when we're looking at these professional level agrochemicals. Mm-hmm. And so they're very highly refined to act on certain specific sites at certain times of the life cycle and blah, blah, blah. So you really got to read this label to understand if you're using it the right concentration with the right co-mixes, because some of these things take other components, as we're going to use in our example today. I mentioned pH ranges. Are they correct there? Some of them have certain environmental conditions. Do not apply over X temperature or phytotoxicity will result. Don't apply when temperatures are less than X, Y, or Z because it's not going to be active. So very narrow ranges. You want to make sure that you're reading these things, honestly, front to back.
Sure.
Certainly if you've never used them before. And yeah, it's a slog. I get it. But there's a ton of information in there that you really need to be aware of.
Yep. And depending on what it is, the taste test, never a good way to go.
Not so much. Although as farmers, we always somehow end up getting it in our mouth, but that's a whole nother story.
So all of these things, especially recently, as we've talked about fungicides, it apparently is rubbing off on me because I knew, I mean, this morning I said, do I need to look up Kurzate before we have this conversation?
As a matter of fact, you do, because that's the label we're going to talk about today. If any of you at home want to follow along, we're looking at the Kurzate 60DF fungicide label for the U.S. Your country may have if Kurzate is labeled there, may be under a different actual specimen label.
I'm intrigued by the website because for a couple of reasons. First of all, the most beautiful picture of potatoes that I've ever seen, so crisp and clean and detailed. And my wife is a photographer and has stuff in with stock agencies. And all I can think of when I look at this is that some photographer thought this was something that would sell.
Yep. And it did, apparently.
And it did. And the other thing I find interesting from a U.S. perspective is that there's a map of where Kurzate is registered, and it's every state except
California.
Surprisingly, no, it is registered in California. Louisiana.
Oh, Louisiana.
I have no idea what's
not
so
enough potatoes there.
Louisiana.
Well, because it costs money to register this stuff in every state, because every state has a different registration requirement. Mm-hmm. And you have to show, you know, trials and in X different locations on X different crops over several years in order to build trends. And some states just take the EPA's word for it and be like, yeah, whatever. Other states require you to do, you know, all this work. And it's just like for Louisiana, there's probably isn't enough crop that this would be used on to be worth their while to label it there.
Yeah, I suppose. Whereas Alaska was all for it.
Yep. You bet.
Huh?
Hose it on.
Anyway, I thought that was interesting.
That works, yeah. But yeah, so Kurzate 60DF, Cymoxanil, Cymoxanil is the active. So you could look it up by that if you wanted to for a generic.
And I'm sure you can see your doctor if Cymoxanil is right for you.
Correct. Yep. May cause prolonged priapism. But anyway, so we're looking at this label. And what's the first thing we see on the first page? The first page is all about, really, so there's so many people, especially on the Discord, that ask me about modes of action of these things. Like, how does Kurzate work? You know, why do I have to do X, Y, Z? What is, how does it control downy mildew, which is what this does? Well, it's right there. It says it literally in one of the first lines of text. So you've got this big black box with white text, Kurzate 60DF fungicide, blah, 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 trademark, Dow AgroSciences. And right underneath of that, there's a bar. And on at least in the United States, every fungicide, pesticide, herbicide will have the same bar. It'll say what the active is, Cymoxanil, and then it'll say group, and then we have a number, 27, and then we have the type of chemical, fungicide. Group 27 fungicide. fungicides are classified as to their modes of action. And group 27 corresponds to a specific mode of action. And you can look that up online. It's pretty simple. And just look up group 27 fungicides. And it will tell you exactly how this chemical works. Any fungicide will have that on it. So if you're curious, go look at that. And what you'll see, I'm not sure exactly in this label, but in some other labels, you'll see do not mix with group 16 fungicides. Mm-hmm. Anything in group 16. So then you'll have to look at your fungicide, what's on the shelf, to make sure you're not mixing it with any like group 16 fungicides or something like that. Or they'll say must be mixed with, you know, group 3, like a protectant, which this one does. We'll get to that in a minute. But that group will tell you everything about the mode of action. So if you have any questions about that, it's right there in the label. But, I mean, if you didn't know that, would you know what group 27 means? No, you wouldn't. Yeah. You would if you got your pesticide applicator's license.
I'm sure.
Mm-hmm. So right beneath that, we look at, now it's talking about the active ingredients and samoxanil and then other ingredients. So you look at this by weight, it's only 60% active ingredient, 40% other. And what is that other? Well, right above that active ingredient section is a description of the physical description. It's a dry, flowable powder. It's not a liquid. It's not what's called a wettable powder. It's a dry, flowable powder, which means it's not going to cake up and turn into a rock on you. It's going to always be flowable no matter, you know, how you're storing it. And in order to get it to do that, they have to add a bunch of other additives to it that have nothing to do with plant protection, which is what's in that 40%.
It's kind of a bulking and texture agent that's in there, basically.
Pretty much. Yep, exactly. And there's other stuff that's in there that allows it to disperse in water when you pour it in there so it doesn't all clump up, right? Like sometimes, like if you put back in the olden days, when you had powdered coffee creamer and you put it in your coffee, it would just sit there in a clump.
Mm-hmm.
You'd have to stir it about. That's because it didn't have any dispersing agents in it. Put a little silicon dioxide in there, and poof, it disperses really easily, which is sand, by the way. So look on any of your like powdered drink mixes, and oftentimes you'll see silicon dioxide as an agent in there. Yes, it's actually sand that they're putting in your powdered drink.
Lovely.
And so you might find that same stuff in one of these compounds as well. Even after you're done spraying, you might see some sediment in the bottom of the tank, and you're like, holy crap, it didn't fully dissolve. No, that was probably just the dispersing agent, because it's not really going to dissolve. It's always going to have that little bit of residue there. But that's the active ingredient will tell you what's in it. And some fungicides may have more than one. They may be a mix in order to, depending on what it is that you're trying to achieve.
Sure.
A ton of info right there, just in that first 1/6 of a page. Obviously, all the Curezate name brand stuff, but active group, percentage of active versus other, and the material type, the physical material type.
And to your point about that, all that information at the very beginning of that page, this is 7 pages long, people, if you're not looking at it right now. So I hope you're strapped in and you have some coffee.
And I'm not going to go through this word for word, but basically the rest of this first page is all about warnings. Mm-hmm. And this is the first part of the cover your ass statement for Dow. First aid of swallow, blah, blah, blah. Precautionary statements, hazardous to humans and domestic animals, according to this EPA, blah, blah, blah. It's got a warning label, warning versus hazard versus danger. That's a whole nother topic to talk about, but it's saying, you know, hey, may be fatal if swallowed. So yeah, don't get it in your mouth. And when they talk about may be fatal, they're talking about, you know, taking spoonfuls of the stuff and eating it. But again, cover your ass, because kids are eating Tide Pods these days. So mm-hmm.
Per your coffee creamer comment.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And I don't want to see the Samoxanil challenge on TikTok. Then it talks, obviously, very important about PPE, personal protective equipment. This is something you want to follow. I mean, yeah, it's a bit of cover your ass, but yeah, you do want to follow this, because, you know, you may not think it's a big deal. No, I'm just going to use a half face mask when it says to use a full spray suit. And then you're 2/3 of the way through your spray application and you realize your shirt is dissolving. wear a spray suit, okay? or, you know, obviously inside a closed tractor, but follow the personal protective equipment sections. And it's going to tell you exactly everything that you need to do to protect yourself in all sorts of spray applications. Like this one's talking specifically mixers and loaders. So this is large scale agrochemical applications. You know, you'll have crews that are running around with tanker trucks and people that are actually all day long just mixing chemical. And obviously their exposure is a lot higher than, you know, a single, you know, a few acre farmer doing this once a week. And then also there's going to be recommendations in here for all different types of application methods. So that's what that section's all about. And then there's an engineering control statement. That's where they talk about worker protection standards, about the actually the person who's doing the application. In this case, it could be a pilot if it's an aerial, or, you know, obviously a tractor. And this is where they say, you know, must use an enclosed cab that meets this certain blah, 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 blah requirements. There's a reason for that. If you're not using an enclosed cab, the expectation is going to be that you're wearing a fully pressurized helmet and spray suit, which I've talked about in the past. Mm-hmm. They're awful. Yeah. Especially when it's 90 degrees like it is today here.
I don't know if we have that on our Amazon list.
I think I do have that on our Amazon list.
I know we've got the full face masks on there.
I thought I had a positive pressure
suit. Oh, helmet.
Maybe they didn't have it. It's not just a spray suit, just like a zip-up Tyvek suit. User safety recommendations. They're like, yeah, you got to do all this other stuff, but we also advise to, you know, wash your hands before you eat, use the toilet.
Basic blocking and tackling here if you don't want to get this stuff into some part of your body.
Correct, yep. Environmental hazards, right? This is toxic to fish and aquatic invertebrates, so basically don't spray this on your lakes and your ponds. Drift control is important, blah, blah, blah. Do not spray directly on water. You're going to see that for most agrochemicals that are not specifically designed to be sprayed in aquatic systems, which there are some to control algae and other blooms. But in most cases, you'll find that these are dangerous to aquatic wildlife. So be careful with and control your drift. Mm-hmm. And then we get into directions for use. And you're like, okay, finally, it's going to tell me exactly what I need to do. Yeah, not so much. It's just going to go. It's going to talk a lot about the use requirements, right, that this product can be used in requirement with the worker protection standard, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, we're still really in the safety area at this
correct,
point.
Yep.
So directions for use are really more about here's what you shouldn't do.
Yeah, pretty much. And this is why we are not held liable if you do stupid stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, like coveralls, long shirt, sleeves, wear pants for God's sakes, chemical resistant gloves, yada, yada, yada. Product information, this is going to tell you what it is. So Cures 860DF is a locally systemic fungicide labeled for use in potatoes, potato seed, pieces, tomatoes, cucumbers, hops, lettuce, head and leaf, and spinach. So hops are on the label, and it is specifically for control of mycetes or downy mildew, and which is responsible for late blight in potatoes and tomatoes and cucumbers. We call it downy in hops, and it's also called downy in lettuce and spinach. So specific to those crops. So to your point, Greg, earlier about why isn't Louisiana on this label? Well, it's probably because they don't have any of those crops and any real volume in that state to even deal with.
Yeah.
So why bother, right? And then they're going to say how to apply it, spray with ground, air, or chemigation equipment, blah, blah, blah. Rain fastness. That's kind of important. So how soon after you spray this can it rain and not like wreck everything you just did? So it says it rapidly penetrates into the plant and is rain fast within 2 hours of application. So if you're like, oh shit, it's going to rain this afternoon and it's 8 a.m, can I get out there and spray? Yep. Get on her. So that's always good. Most fungicide, most pesticides at all will have some sort of rain fastness statement. Because some of them will say, you know, do not apply until, you know, unless, you know, you can guarantee 12 hours of leaf dryness, something like that. And you're like, oh, okay. I can't do it when there's any rain potentially in the forecast, or even spray it late in the day and have heavy dew such that it would collect on the leaves and run off, then you're going to reduce your effectiveness. So restrictions, Do not use Cures 860 DF alone. Always tank mix with a labeled rate of protectant fungicide.
Huh. And of course, I saw that first sentence and thought they were saying, have a buddy. You know, do not apply this when you're by yourself.
Yeah. You want to be my spray buddy? Yeah, so this, for whatever reason, and I don't want to get into this. I did on the Discord a little bit, actually. But why Cures 8 specifically needs to be applied with a different type of fungicide, specifically a protectant. And protectant fungicides fall within, there's two different fungicide groups. So you could look those up. I'm not going to give you all the answers to see what that follows with. Although later here on the same page, we talk about tank mixtures. It's going to tell us what type of things that we can mix this stuff with, ideally. Use only in commercial farm plantings, blah, blah, blah. Don't use this basically in your greenhouse flowers or on your yard. James Richard. I would never do that on, say, my potato or tomatoes in the backyard like I did yesterday. Hey, man.
Oh, boy.
I also sprayed it on my hops. Give me a break. Cultivar varietal, crop safety. You oftentimes will see, you know, this basically isn't safe for all crops. We've said what we've labeled it for, but if you're going to use it off label, use it your own risk. And then it's going to talk about IPM. This is kind of an environmental, I call this greenwashing statement. Hey, IPM is important, and you should do all these things in order to maintain, you know, good balance in your hop yard. But for God's sakes, please spend $900 on a pound of this stuff to spray everywhere, and life is going to be good, right? So I call that the greenwashing statement. You're not, frankly, going to get a whole lot out of that section. Mm-hmm. But the tank mix, this is where it's going to, like I said, tell us what we're going to mix it with. And this one specifically says mix with a protectant fungicide such as EBDC, chlorthalonil, copper, etc., something like that. And all those will fall into similar groups. But they want those things, those protectants, to also be labeled for the same disease that you're trying to control. I mean, you don't want to put a protectant in there that works against powdery mildew if you're trying to control downy.
Right, right. Do it all together. And I guess the question I'll ask, and I know we've talked about this before, is if they want you to do a mix, why don't they just sell the mix?
Because it's probably not stable, long shelf stable in solution, because this stuff is very concentrated, right? And you're diluting it very, very minimally. Like I did the math, and I'll tell you how to do this in a minute for spot spraying, because I only have a few hop plants left, right? I'm doing some breeding stuff, and I've got enough to spray in a tiny little, you know, hand sprayer. And so I have to take these rates and crunch them down to the point where I'm using milligrams of this active in a half a liter of water. So it's like, it's very, very concentrated. So if you try to mix all this stuff together in one jug in a concentrated form, the physical formulation probably won't stay together.
Ah.
So it's like, just separate them apart. And sometimes you'll find chemicals, not necessarily agrochemicals, sometimes, where it's like in a co-pack, where you'll have, there'll actually be two solutions in the same bottle, but separated by a wall.
I'm thinking about an epoxy syringe. Yeah,
exactly. So you keep them separated. When they combine, they're active, but they're only active for a very short period of time, or they're active, they keep them separate because they're not shelf stable together.
Gotcha.
That's like, gotcha. It's not very optimal from a manufacturing standpoint to have a co-pack like that. But sometimes you have to do it. So that's what that tank is going to talk about, you know, tank mixtures. This was also where you might see something about using an adjuvant. And you've way in the way back when we had Joe on, we talked about adjuvants and what they do. You know, they modify the chemistry of the liquid to change the physical properties. It may say must use with a penetrant, must use with a sticker, must use with a spreader, or use a crop oil concentrate. That would also be in this section. Most likely, but it would be probably in the second or third page somewhere there. And then we're going to talk about application information, volume. So it depends on how you're applying it, aerial, chemigation, or ground-based. And this is all also cover your ass stuff. This is stuff that you would have learned in your pesticide applicators training. Doesn't mean you can ignore it, because there might be some important information in there, but in general, it's best practice stuff for handling fungicides.
Yep. I like how they've got minimums listed there, but not necessarily maximums. So it's, you know.
For where? Where's that?
For the application volumes.
Oh, right. That's because you want to make sure you get enough liquid to whatever crop that you're using. And so they, when they're out doing studies on these things, they're doing rate studies and volume studies to see how little can we apply to actually get this thing to do something.
Sure.
And they found that 20 gallons per acre is the minimum for ground application. Now, in hops, when you're using an air blast sprayer, you're going to be at like 150 gallons of the acre. Because you get a lot more foliage to cover than you do if you're applying to potatoes on the ground, right? So keep that in mind. If you're looking at that as a hop grower, you're like, oh, 20 gallons? I don't think I can spray that little. When you get down into the crop section, it might specify a little bit more about specifically for hops. It'll say X amount of active per acre in this much volume usually. Well, I'll talk about that in a second. Pesticide handling, blah, 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 blah. Mixing instructions. So this is going to tell you how to mix it. And this is important, certainly when it comes to getting, making sure it's fully dissolved into the spray liquid. So fill the tank a quarter to a third full while it's still agitating. So you got the pump on and it's mixing. You're adding the curzate. You're going to agitate it. It's going to be going through the pump. This pump is helping to break up any clumps and sometimes provide some shearing action, depending on the pump you're using, to get this stuff thoroughly dissolved or dispersed. Some of it may not actually dissolve. Like copper is not going to dissolve. It will stay a particle, but it will be dispersed. That's why they use the word dispersed instead. And then once it's fully dispersed, keep the agitation going. Fill the tank up with water. So now you're diluting it to the correct amount, right? Before adding any other material. So that it said that this compound needed to be mixed or sprayed with a protectant. So put the curazate in, make sure it's fully dissolved, fill the tank up with water, then add your copper. And they've got reasons for that. They've done field tests and lab tests to say this is the best way to do this. If you add your copper too early, you may change the pH of the solution too dramatically. You may crash the solution. So follow the directions.
Yep. And just as an aside, you know, we talked about all that safety stuff beforehand. The bodysuit, the mask, you know, the airway protection and all that, that's not for when you're spraying only. You put that on before you open the container.
Pretty much. Yeah. Certainly when you're dealing with dry flowables and you're doing this out in the field and the wind is blowing.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's the concentrated solution. That's when you want to be the most protected. As opposed to, you know, when you're spraying and it's already diluted. I'm not saying it's less dangerous, less hazardous, but I think your risk of exposure is lower at that point.
Mm-hmm.
But certainly when you're using the concentrates. So there's other recommendations on here. If you're doing multiple applications, you may want to make a pre-slurry so that you don't have mixing imbalances between loads, blah, blah, blah. But for most of we small growers, you're going to do one or two loads max. For smaller growers, I won't worry about that too much. And then there's a physical compatibility statement. And this is where they would tell you, basically, it won't work with this thing. Do not add with X, Y, and Z. So if we were looking at an Alliette label, a phosphorus acid, aluminum phosphatyl, it would say here, physical compatibility, do not apply with copper, period, end of story, good night. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, things of that nature. So what you also see in here, this is also where they would talk about If you don't know about the compatibility, do a jar test where you mix a little bit of everything together and see if the solution stays stable. If it doesn't crash, and then you're in good shape. And then they talk about the tank mixing sequence if you need to mix multiple things together. So, which we already talked about up there in the mixing instructions.
Yep.
Let's get into the use rates and applications. This is usually where everybody jumps to. They start looking for the tables, and then they scroll down here to look for their crop. And then they like, that's the only thing they look at. So it's like, okay, hops, downy mildew, 3.2 ounces per acre. Okay, 3.2 ounces per acre, but on how much liquid? Well, at least 20 gallons. Mm-hmm. So James, you mean I'm putting 3.2 ounces in anywhere between 20 gallons and 150 gallons of the acre? Yep. Well, isn't that making a much more dilute solution at the higher rates? Yep.
Mm-hmm.
But isn't it going to be less active? Nope. Because look at how we're calculating this. It's on a per acre basis, on a land area basis. Not on a plant basis, not on a plant volume basis. It's on a land area basis. So they're saying 3.2 ounces per acre for hops, because they've already done the research on hops to know that 3.2 ounces in whatever carrier volume you're going to need for an air blast sprayer, which is what you're likely using, is going to give you control. That's how they got it on hops on the label. They had to do the research to prove that application rate. But you'll also notice if you go up above that to cucurbits, 3.2 to 5 ounces per acre. Wow. That's more.
That's more, yeah.
But it has those crops have less foliage. Well, I don't know why, but what they found in their research was that in some cases you may need to use more concentration in order to get control. Hmm. But you don't want to use more than what the label is dictating, because they found an upper range. If you go beyond that, you're going to risk phytotoxicity.
Yep.
So for whatever reason, at 3.2 ounces is the upper end for hops. Because when we're in the field, we're doing this research, we're doing what we call half X, X, and 2X concentration rates to establish a concentration curve. So we're spraying, we're saying, okay, we think we're going to go on with, you know, that about 3 ounces is probably right. So let's do a study that looks at 3.2 ounces or 3 ounces and then half of that and twice that and see what the results are. And that's how they land on sort of what their concentrations should be in order for to prevent phytotoxicity, but also apply enough to get good control.
And they also, in that same table, talk about repetition and restrictions there on how much you should use per season.
Correct.
Along the same lines, having tested it and knowing what the line is between efficacy and phytotoxicity.
Correct. And you want to make sure that you're not building up resistance to the downy mildew that's in your yard to this compound. So you need to rotate it.
Mm-hmm. They also say here, and we've talked about this before, how close to harvest can you do this? Because you can't spray and then harvest the next day.
Well, with some compounds you can. But where they have a 0-day PHI, so it means you could spray it the same day if you wanted to. But those compounds you're also going to find are much more broad spectrum and much probably less efficacious. Not necessarily, but usually. So they're going to be things that also might fall into the organic classifications. But in general, a 7-day PHI pre-harvest interval is pretty damn good.
Mm-hmm. Well, what's interesting is that the table above that, which is more of your general vegetables, cucumbers, you know, pumpkins, whatever, has a 3-day PHI.
Yep, because those products are going to end up going through some sort of post-harvest washing and cleaning process.
Yep.
Hops don't. The flowers don't do that, right? So whatever residue is going to be on those flowers, you want to make sure you've got basically what it's saying, at least a week for that residue to either get rained on and fall in on, be washed off or dewed on and drip off or break down in the sun, which is what's happening. UV light is breaking down any residue that's on the leaves or on the cones. And so they found that 7 days is the minimum pre-harvest interval that you would want to do that with. If you apply it and harvest it before that, you're still going to be able to find active semioxidal residue on those hop cones, which will end up in your beer, and we don't want that.
No, yuck.
Right, so that's how that works. And then, the restrictions. Do not apply within 7 days of harvest. Do not apply more than X amount or, equivalents per year. And do not use more than 4 times. And that's specifically aimed at making sure you don't build up a resistance in your disease population. You want to rotate active ingredients and rotate fungicide groups.
Interesting. So it's more about resistance and less about overuse and phytotoxicity.
Correct. It's all about resistance. Mm-hmm. You want to change up the modes of action, change up the fungicide group to basically keep the disease on its toes so that it genetically can't evolve to build up a resistance to that compound.
Makes sense.
Mm-hmm. And then you're going to go through here, you're going to see other crops in here, blah, 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 blah. Who cares?
We're about hops. It's in the name of the podcast.
cue in on that. But there's also, they're like, oh, chemigation. You mean I could put this stuff through my irrigation system? You can if you had, you know, overhead irrigation that you were irrigating your potatoes or your cucumbers with, but not for hops. Adding it to your drip lines isn't going to do much because it's not really going to be taken up via roots. This is purely a foliar application. Mm-hmm. There's usually also aerial in here too. Maybe I missed it, but there it is.
Spray drift.
Yeah, aerial application. Talk about spray drift. Aerial applications. I've never seen aerial applications in hops. Maybe somebody does it, but I've never seen it in hops.
I think because no one who maintains a hop farm can afford a plane.
Oh, well, you hire the stunt. And there are some crazy, crazy-ass aerial application pilots out there, I tell you. Holy crap. They make stunt pilots blush. But there is air blast, right? So, and one of the very, very little comment here, spray must be directed at the canopy. Yeah.
As opposed to, you know, don't spray your farm hands as a gag.
Yeah, and then user must turn off outward pointing nozzles at row ends and when spraying outer rows. So basically, don't just be hosing this stuff into the air.
Okay.
Right. I mean, that's akin to the warning on the Tide Pods bag that says do not eat.
Yeah, it's on the list of things you shouldn't have to say out loud, but we're going to say it out loud anyway.
Right. And some of us may not be using air blast. Some of us may be using ground booms, so they may just be vertical. Mm-hmm. And this is all for spray drift. You don't want this stuff. You want to keep the spray as contained within the yard as possible for environmental purposes as well, yeah, and personal health purposes, but also for just efficacy. You don't want to be, this shit's expensive. You know, you want to keep it in your yard. So also don't be out there air blast spraying when you've got a 25-mile-an-hour sustained wind.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, you say it's expensive. And, of course, you know, what, 3.2 ounces per acre, maximum four times season. It's, okay, well, I'm using a dropper full. But, right. Yes, it's expensive.
For we non-traditional smaller growers, you know, you buy a bag of this. And you're like, holy crap, it's how much? $460? But if you're on an acre or 2 acres, that's going to last you a long time. Mm-hmm. As opposed to, you know, when we had 60 acres, you're like, oof, you know, our fungicide bill would be $45,000 a year.
Jeez.
So,
yeah. And so, mm-hmm. So spraying off the ends and into space, not wise.
Not wise. So, and then it talks about spray drift advisories. Cause again, this is another sort of cover your ass. They're trying to be good stewards of the environment by keeping this stuff where, you know, in the yard where it's supposed to be, but also talks about droplet size. And we've talked about spray technology before in the way back, and I talked about nozzles and the different droplets, whether they're solid or hollow droplets, or, you know, the form of the jet makes an impact. And that's what they're talking about here, because you may find that it's going to recommend you use a certain type of nozzle. Mm-hmm. Because they've discovered in their trials that that type of droplet has the best efficacy. And it may be use a air induction nozzle for high density foliage crops on the ground, like cucurbits and potatoes, but use a flat fan or a solid cone on an air blast sprayer. They do all of that research. I know, because I did it. That was my job.
and this is part of why, you know, it's no different than prescription medications. That's part of why the cost is so high. All of the research that has to be done in order to make sure that what you're getting works the right way and is as efficient as possible.
And to get one of these compounds registered in a state, and like particularly Wisconsin's a really tough state to get things registered, and they just don't bow to what the EPA says. I mean, you're looking at hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars to get a single chemical registered on a single crop. Mm-hmm. This shit is expensive, and it's expensive to do because we want to make sure that it's environmentally sound and, you know, it's not going to cause cancer.
Yep.
So
all the more reason to, mm-hmm. when we say read the label,
use it right?
Correctly.
Right. It's going to talk about, just drift control. And then you're going to have a storage and disposal because sometimes you've got stuff left over. Right. And what do I do with it? I just don't dump it down. Do I just hose it on the ground? What am I going to do with this stuff? So it's going to tell you how to deal with that, how to do it safely. Mm-hmm. all that good kind of stuff. It's also, you know, it's also going to tell you about how to store the stuff. Some of the stuff is like, most of these dry flowable powders are really temperature stable. So it's like, put it in the barn and forget about it. And in a controlled area, we should all have a controlled pesticide area. But other compounds are like, no, it has to be stored between like 50 and 90 degrees Fahrenheit. And some of us in areas, it gets way colder and way warmer than that in an enclosed structure. So then you have to have a climate controlled area where you're keeping these compounds.
And preferably not next to your processed hops that are also in climate control.
That is correct. That is also illegal. yeah. Or, you know, in your living room because it's air conditioned. You don't want it there either.
We get back into the, you know, how to not piss off your spouse while you're growing hops.
Pretty much.
Conversation.
Pretty much. So there you go. There's almost 45 minutes of rambling about how to read a fungicide label.
Wow. There's
Greg,
a lot
you probably
going
didn't
on.
Think you were like, what? This isn't going to take long.
Well, and didn't I say to you, I'm sure you've got like three or four of these we can go through. I figured, oh yeah, we'll run through a couple. Uh-huh. But yeah, there is a lot going on there. It all comes down to paying attention. Look, how many times we've said this about every other thing we talk about. Pay attention. Know what you're doing. Don't, you know, quick and easy does not work. Understand, especially something this expensive. Jeez.
You want to be my spray buddy?